Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to this very special episode where I felt like I needed to give a radio intro in front of a live audience. You'll see what I mean, and I'm thankful to my hero, Chris Coyer, for saving the day and pulling me out of broadcast mode into live mode. First time for everything. I was so delighted when, at the beginning of 2017, Eric Meyer and Jeffrey Zeldman asked me if I wanted to record a live episode at my favorite design conference they happened to have co-founded, called An Event Apart. My nerves said no, but my heart said hell yes. What came forth was just a ton of goodness. I'm still in awe at my panel of bad design Avengers, consisting of Cassie McDaniel, Chris Coyer, and Luke Robluski, who each added so much value to the episode and the attendees. By the way, the incredible AV team at An Event Apart also provided me with a video. So if you're not currently seeing me and would prefer to watch this discussion, it's on YouTube. It's on the channel at youtube.com/userdefenders. I'll be sure to put a link in the show notes as well. Oh, one last thing. Did I mention this session took place right after happy hour? Please enjoy this very special first ever live broadcast of User Defenders Podcast.
Good evening, one and all. You can come forward if you want. It's really okay. Especially if you're going to want to ask a question, because we move the mics up to the front. We're tricky like that. Anyway, hi, it's Eric again. I'm just here to introduce what we've got going this evening. Jason Ogle, the host of User Defenders, a local hero, was good enough to agree to come and do a live recording of his podcast here on stage, taking questions from the audience later on. So I hope you enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jason, who will introduce our guests.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you. All right. How's everybody doing tonight? Excellent. Thanks for being here. Thanks for coming to this. I know it's been a long day, and it's been an awesome day. I can't believe my mind is like blowing up right now. I'm sure you guys feel the same way. So thanks for being here. This is going to be a fun time together, real relaxed, informal, but I think it's going to be very inspiring as well. So greetings, User Defenders. That's how I start my podcast. Welcome to this very special first ever live broadcast of User Defenders Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Ogle, coming at you from beautiful Denver, Colorado at An Event Apart's very first Denver Special Edition. In case you haven't heard of the podcast, I sit in my garage with a blanket over my head, and I talk to inspiring UX superheroes, as I fondly refer to them, who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same.
This is good radio. This is good for the video, all this intro stuff.
That's what I'm working for.
It's going to play well.
Because this is going to be played later, too.
So I am confused about the blanket, though.
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird, no. I saw a talk by Lulu Miller, actually, who did, she's an NPR, she does Invisibilia podcast. And she was talking about this best secret in radio. It's so great. It's a great talk. Highly recommend it. And she said that some of the biggest broadcasters around put a blanket over their head or go in their closet, and it creates a studio quality recording.
Yeah.
So that was like a really neat little secret.
I've heard that too. Have you seen that? There's that HBO show that's like the history of hip hop kind of thing. And there's like, oh God, this is terrible.
I don't. Are you talking about blanket heads? The show Blanket Heads?
It's not the show Blanket Heads, but there was a thing in it where this guy used a box because he didn't like to send people off to a vocal studio, a vocal booth, because then you're just like alone and it's hard to get in the flow. Huh. Like, why not just put the microphone in this little box and then it sounds good to wherever you are and you're more in the flow. Anyway, go on.
I like that.
You use a blanket too, don't you?
Yeah, so that's what I do. I sit in my garage and I have the privilege of talking to wonderful superheroes. Chris was on the show, episode 28. It was an awesome episode. So thanks for being here again. Anybody out of town? Anybody from out of town? Wow. Sorry for the oxygen deficiency. That's a design problem that Google's working on right now.
Almost there.
Almost there. So anyway, yeah. So thanks a lot for being here. What else? I have some t-shirts. Anybody want a t-shirt? Who wears a small t-shirt, and who wants one?
This girl here.
Woo!
Oh, God.
That was close.
Sorry. Oh.
We could have.
Mike just told
everywhere.
Me to watch out for beverages too. Sorry, Mike. Awesome. So yeah, let's do this. Let's take a second to introduce ourselves. Why don't you tell us who you are, what you do, and your design superpower, please. Cassie, you want to kick us off?
Sure. Yeah. I'm Cassie McDaniel. I had the wrong bio up on the site for the longest time, but I was previously the design director at the Mozilla Foundation, and I have recently left as of May, kind of starting up with my husband, starting our own private studio, design studio. So I work with him, and we have clients in all different kinds of mediums, print and digital.
Are they secret clients? Do you have a cool one you can talk about?
The one that I'm most excited about right now is the UN housing rapporteur. So she's like the watchdog for the whole world to make sure that housing violations are heard
but
by governments.
Who watches the watchdog?
Nobody. She's a free agent.
I trust her already.
Yeah, and we're doing the branding and the website for her.
Cool.
Yeah, and design superpower. I'm a big fan of people who have multiple talents and trying to address and build those talents. So I think writing is the one thing that I do in addition to visual design. So nice. I consider that a superpower because not everybody can spell correctly. So I try to do that.
Especially millennials. No, just kidding, guys. That's a very important one, especially in this field, writing, being able to share our ideas and inspire others. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
Love
Did
it.
I get all your points?
That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Use Grammarly. I feel like it's made me twice as good of a writer.
I do not use it.
Where commas
yeah,
go?
I already know.
Are you a millennial?
I'm not.
I heard that's for millennials. Is it? I don't know.
You have to do an eye scan before that?
Yeah, they test your blood.
I like it.
Good.
Chris, who are you? Who are you really?
Yeah, I forgot. After somebody just did their intro, I was sitting here like, oh, interesting. Not remembering I would have to do one in 10 seconds. Most of my time I work on an app called CodePen, which is like a code editor in the browser kind of thing, a social network deal. Yeah, it's on my elevator pitch for it. It's terrible because people use it for so many different things that I'm like, I hate to just like say one thing and then people think of it that way. I'm like, you use it for whatever you want, really. Just write code and look at what happened.
Fixing your grammar? Can I use it like Grammarly? No? Oh.
It's only because it replaces the text area with a different thing and Grammarly doesn't work and not and replace text areas.
Millennial eye scan? Can I use it for a millennial eye scan?
I could. Okay. So, CodePen, and then I've been writing about the web on things like CSS tricks on my site for a long time, over a decade, which is a medium long time on the web, not really long time.
And your design superpower.
Oh, superpower. I wonder what I said back in episode 28. I don't remember.
It was taking vacations.
Was it really?
Oh, that's awesome, so I can use a different one, although I am okay at that.
You know what it definitely used to be, although we'll see, it's been a minute since I practiced this, but just the ability of like taking someone else's flat, like a JPEG or something of a design and converting it into HTML, CSS, I used to just rock at that. I used to just, you know, it's like 30 seconds, just like I know exactly what divs I need and what, you know, and I feel like I'm still like pretty good at that. I think the need for like exactly that skill has diminished in my roles these days, but I at least just love that. Like just give me a mock-up, I'll blast this thing out and...
Awesome. No, that is how you answered. That's what you're
asking. Oh, God damn it, really? You're bringing a tear to my eye.
That's good.
Luke?
Your turn.
Yeah, thanks. Now I'm going to get subjected to some jokes during mine. So yeah. I'll keep it short. I make software things, and I currently do it at Google, and I did it a couple other places before. Design superpower patience.
Mm. Nice.
Just wait, and then over time, things will get better, or people will listen to you.
Get less angry, right?
You can't get it all now, so. Like, that's grammar fixes. You know, it'll fix itself later. Somebody will comment on your Google Doc. This is which it's to use.
Luke's, like, data-based slide-making abilities are pretty similar.
You know what? I have... Mm-hmm. Completely bought into the religion of collaborative documents.
Have you?
Yeah, I'm so sold on it. You kind of like throw some crap up.
Yeah.
And
just let other people?
Yeah, other people's brains will make up for your deficiencies.
You should use Notion. It's really good. It's, check it out. It's really good.
Yeah. I'll look into that.
I don't know if they'll let you use it. Actually.
They might, you know, we'll find out.
Yeah, I think it's also capturing screens. I mean, where do you, you must have a, like a hard drive with like thousands of screens
because
you,
worse,
you analyze the changes, even the smallest changes.
No,
I think that's
worse.
Pretty incredible.
I have a room in my basement. That when we bought the house, it was like a safe room, had this weird lock combo thing on it. And it was kind of decrepit,
weird.
Right? Yeah, so I spent a couple weeks,
room.
Maybe months, styling it out, put in some nice shelving, little lights. And I just take all my old devices and put them in there on these little shelves.
Really?
Yeah, and so when it comes time to take the screenshots, I just go to the old devices that have the old
software.
Which are
definitely still there.
Because
they're all still safe.
Because they're safe, yeah. Yeah. That safe room, so they stay safe.
Right on. This is going to be a lot of fun. Can you tell? So in the audience, how many of you are either in transition or out of work right now? Okay, yeah. So my question
what
here.
What about thinking about being in transition?
That's a good question. Who's thinking of maybe moving on? And you're not on video, I don't think, so it might be safe to...
But we are using facial recognition technology.
But yeah, good question, you know, who's thinking of moving on? So my question for the panel is, you know, what's your best advice for these folks in finding, you know, that right fit or just in their job search?
Let's start down there that time. We'll work.
Oh, me? Okay.
I feel like it's everybody probably, you know, like everybody's always kind of thinking about moving on, right?
Sure.
Okay, you
go. Is that your dirty little secret? Are you thinking?
No, but I've never
Are you going to leave CodePen?
No, but...
Okay.
No, I think that's true. I mean, even, like, I'm doing what I really want to do and what I've always wanted to do, but I still think about full-time employment sometimes.
Sure.
Sure, it's natural.
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Cool.
But ultimately, there's pros and cons to everything. Right? Like, I mean, there's good things about being in big companies and there's really crappy things about being in good big companies. Same with small startups. Same with one of the things I always say about running your own company, it's like the boss is always with you because you're the boss, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in the potty, guess who's there? The boss. You're going to bed at night, guess who's there? The boss. You wake up in the morning, boss is there. You're laughing because it's true.
Yeah,
you feel it.
That's why.
Yeah, that is why. So I don't think there's anything perfect, but I think it's nice to shift between those types of roles because you get a lot of understanding of how the other side kind of works. And if you do agency work, being in a big company opens you up to seeing how the clients that you interact with work day to day. So you can do a better job with that. And then similarly, if you go on the outside, you can see how big companies are viewed by other people. So that's, and I actually like this for switching professions too, right? I've done lots of different professions. My official title now is product manager, but I've done all kinds of different types of roles, and I think that also helps a ton because you can be like, oh, so that's what an engineer's life is like. Maybe I shouldn't be such a prick to them while they're trying to code this.
I like that, yeah, having empathy for other disciplines around you, for sure. I think that makes for a really good team and strong products.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What was the question again exactly?
Oh, well, any advice for someone who's maybe trying to transition out and find, right. find
my,
a good
My advice
place
is consider different kinds of things. You know, don't be so locked into one discipline, one type of role.
I like that.
Yeah, I've hopped around quite a bit. I've worked for small agencies and ad agencies, and then I took a complete different tack and worked in healthcare for a time before I went to Mozilla, and then now have my own small practice. So the experience of working in healthcare was incredibly enlightening. And I think it was intimidating because I didn't know any of the acronyms and I didn't, you know how that world worked at all. But they were so eager to have my skill set and new perspective on what they were doing. It you know, in retrospect, I don't know why it was intimidating at all. So definitely consider other industries, even education or social causes. You don't have to be stuck in doing client services or if you work in healthcare now, you don't have to be stuck in that. You can move around.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of disciplines that really, really need the help, which could actually be really nice avenues to kind of come into the profession too,
mm-hmm.
right? And you can kind of learn alongside the organization, and as they grow, you grow.
Well,
That's true. Yeah, and a lot of companies, thankfully, are seeing the value of design, and maybe companies who've not ever had that in-house especially. So I think that's really great advice.
The other thing I'd say, we don't talk about money very much, but money is not everything, but it does allow freedom, and it's a little bit of power. So if you just have 3 to 6 months savings of your expenses, you have a lot more possibilities, and it's a privilege, really, to be able to jump around. But if you have that buffer, then you feel a bit safer doing it.
No, that's excellent. And I would say culture. Vet the culture as best as you can, because you know, life's too short to hang your hat somewhere where you're not valued and your contributions aren't valued. Really consider that, I would say. We spend more time at work than we do at home with our families or you know things like that. So that would be my advice. And a little plug here. I'm starting a podcast with a guy named Justin Dower, who's a friend of Jeffrey's, and you know he wrote a book called Cultivating a Creative Culture. Incredible book. Highly recommend reading that. Actually, he started the podcast. I'm just going to join him in 2018, so it's going to be really interesting. Just talking a lot about culture, interviewing champions of culture. So, but I would say for sure, vet the culture as best you can. Connect with people on LinkedIn that work there. Talk about, ask questions about it, and find out how much they invest in their people too, as far as growth. Those are really, I think, important things to consider as well.
One more thing.
Yes, please.
The grass is greener where you water it.
Wow. Somebody tweet that right now.
Until the cow comes.
But then it gets fertilized and it grows more. Okay. I'm trying.
You can milk the cow.
And you can milk the cow. And what else? And you can have a steak.
Vegetarian.
Oh, vegetarian. Sorry, veggies. With more, so my next question is kind of a segue from the first one. You know, with more and more products being offered with machine learning, automated web design, should we be worried about our jobs? What can we do to make sure we stay indispensable in our work?
Are you guys worried?
Anybody worried?
I've yet to see. There's two angles to this. Here's some content, make a beautiful website, and have the output from that be any good. As soon as you see one good demo, then I'll be like, okay, let's talk about this. But until that day, and maybe that's just me or whatever. But that's there's another whole side of this that has happened already, which is this the rise of Squarespace and Wix and Weebly and what the whole list of that, which are getting so super good that I feel like they've just decimated the middle tier of freelance work, the client that's got $360 to spend on their website for their small business or whatever.
That's the middle tier? Yeah, no wonder people are looking for work out here.
Maybe you should have said
the middle tier. Yeah.
But I feel like there used to be a class of web designer that did that, or at least amateur hobbyist, or they took money for doing it, and they made it up in scale. Like they'd have lots of clients that did that, and maybe it'd be even the couple of $1,000 type of stuff. That stuff is gone.
But did anybody really want to be doing that?
Maybe
work?
Not.
I mean, I think it's actually our fault.
Good thing.
Because we made framework upon framework and abstraction layer upon abstraction layer, and we made making web pages so damn hard that we boxed everybody out. And so average person can't do it. Right? Even today, you go ahead and make me a PWA AMP responsive, Well, God knows, I can't even name the technologies anymore. I used to be able to. I can't even say the words Jekyll something, word something.
You can
I don't
still
know.
Buy some commodity hosting and put a WordPress or Craft site on it or something.
You kind of sort of can. But all these things came in, I think, in response to that, right? Mm. This, why do people not blog anymore? Because it's easier in other places.
I haven't encouraged people to do it. I'm not that history is gone. I'm like, somebody comes to me and asks, oh, I need a website for my restaurant downtown. I'm like, you should totally use Squarespace.
Yeah,
it'll be safer. It'll not sponsored or anything. It'll look better. You just don't have to worry about it. You just log in and change stuff. It's great.
They do it all for you. But the key word there, I think, is all. The all has become a really big thing. Right?
Yeah. I do the same thing. I don't want to build those websites. I have no desire. I think it's really, really good. It's cut out the fluff. It's cut out the crap. And you can focus on the thing that you have the most fun doing, that's the hardest to do, that you have to actually think to do it, or you have to actually go out and make your own content. That's kind of cool that you can just focus on that and not worry about, you know, the tech side of it. And the
yeah, but people used to say books are going to go away, right? Oh, books, books are not gone away. Right? Movies are going to go away. No, movies haven't gone away. These things have a really, really long shelf life. And I don't think robots are going to make movies anytime soon, just like they're not going to. I mean, they already write books, but did you read a robot book? You may have. You may not know.
The web did a pretty good job of staying relevant. Like, if the web really screwed up, if, like, standards really went the wrong way, and browsers were just implementing crap right and left, and there was no effort to bring
that
all
something
in.
Like, people would be spending, like, what, 3.5 hours on Facebook and only 5 minutes on the web? It would be that kind of world,
that'd
right?
That would be weird.
If we really had screwed up, then that's what it would be like. But here we are.
It's getting it's starting. A minute. I can't.
No. Sorry, am I a downer? Am I a downer? I'm not trying to be a downer. But at the point, I think the meta point is things keep changing, right? And I think the best way to remain relevant is to change, right? And kind of adapt. And so as things become too difficult to build and maybe Squarespace becomes a viable thing, you know, don't fight everything. Don't fight change and kind of roll with the change and adapt.
There you
and
go.
You'll be in a good place.
Maybe an alternate side of that is to focus on the core skills as well, which I think we can never be good enough at.
Like email writing?
Yeah, email writing, scheduling, calendar invites.
Yeah. Meeting going to? Yeah.
No, but I mean drawing or grammar. Grammarly might not be around forever, so.
Yeah, communication. I mean, this field is all about communication.
Yeah.
I think I great advice for sure, and I feel like another way we can do this too is to look for opportunities and where we are, and think about business too. I mean, that's been a really neat thing to observe in this field as well, is to see so many designers getting a seat at the table, you know, and understanding business a lot more. And I think those are also great ways to stay indispensable, if you will, at your role. And looking for opportunities to create something, create a product. Like, you've talked to people in your company and find out what their needs are. Like, you know, there's a great question. You can say, if you had a magic wand, what would you create to make your job easier or make your life easier? Like, those are really interesting questions to ask folks around you. And that might spark an idea that you can actually start. You know, of course, after you get a blessing from your manager, of course, but you can start kind of, you know, wireframing that out and kind of thinking about how you can create something like that. Like, I was able to do that at my job, and that just helped save my job after, sadly, our whole creative department was restructured. So things like that can really make a difference.
Don't wait for blessings from your manager.
Okay.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Make your own damn table, right? Like, you don't want to sit at their old stinky table anyway. It's like, the seats are all warm and weird, and you don't want to be there. You can make a much more badass table because you're a designer and you have all these amazing skills, so you can do your own thing. And then people will want to sit at your table.
Yeah, I like that. What is it? There's a quote, something about, like, just act now, like ask for forgiveness later or something like that.
Yeah,
I like that. That's cool. So with VR, AR, and AI looming over us, the iPhone X notch thing, the everlasting should designers argument, not to mention all the other things we have to keep up with as digital experience designers, what should we be focusing our attention on learning right now?
I feel like I already gave you my answer, which is the basics, the core graphic design, what Jen was talking about, some of those core graphic design principles from a design perspective, I think, will be really handy, and or how to manage people, how to convince them to believe what you believe. That's a useful skill, always useful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree.
Yeah, what should you learn right now? Pass.
I thought you said the past.
Oh, that's good. Cool. Yeah,
I thought you said past.
History.
Can learn a lot from history.
Over on our podcast, we always have like a sound bite where we click, where we recorded at a live thing like this, and we put our microphones out and had everybody say, just build websites, which is this like kind of cheesy phrase, but the sentiment of it is just do the work. Get the job, do the work, start over, do it again, start over, do it again. Hopefully solve some people's problems along the way, charge somebody for it, and you'll just get better at what you do, you know? I think solving the immediate problem in front of you is more important than like, some podcast told me to learn Webpack or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Don't listen to podcasts, is that your advice?
We're gonna edit that out.
We're gonna edit that out. So you're not in charge here. The editor is ultimately who drives the decisions here. The question was, what should you learn of all these things? I'm kind of like you. I don't have any specific thing to tell people to learn. I think you have. Actually, I have a.
Are
I
we got all a, too grizzled?
No, I got a good way of answering this question. I have a. I hope he's not listening. There's no way he'll listen to this. I have a 21-year-old who lives in my basement. Sorry, he won't listen to it. 21-year-old who lives in my basement who wants to get into technology. It's my cousin, right? He moved out. And in order to motivate him, for a while there, I was asking him, like, you know, what are you interested in? What are your interests? He's like, oh, I'm interested in technology. I'm interested in video. And, you know, I tried to kind of build on that to get him motivated to things. And after a while, I realized I was asking the wrong question because I thought of a different framing of it. To help people find their calling. And I think it's much more important to find what your calling is than to keep up with any particular thing, because who knows. And the framework that I have kind of put into my brain, which may or may not make sense, is what are you good at? Step one, kind of find that. Then find instances of, have people appreciated that thing that you're good at? Have you gotten any form of appreciation for it? And three, is it help people? Is you doing that helping anybody? Because if you can make those three things connect, then you're off to the races. Right? If you have something that you're good at, that people appreciate, that's actually creating some value for other people, it's helping them out, then that's what you should spend your time doing and working on. And getting lost in buzzwords like AR,
did it
VR,
work?
I could
see being a little intimidated by that.
You know what the tough process is? The finding what you're good at, because I'm going to go into issues that we probably shouldn't talk about. But it used to be you kind of can explore a lot of things to figure out what you're good at when you're young. And now all these paths are so like set for you and so structured that you no longer have that opportunity to kind of bounce around crap and fail, and it's okay that you failed.
Yeah.
The price for failure now for the youth is much more, like, you know, you can't even have a report card in like grade school. Somebody was telling me at Yale, if they give somebody a B, it goes to arbitration where the professor has to defend why they gave the B to the student.
Wow.
He's like, holy crap, right?
Did he hone in on something? What's the end of the story? Are you still working on it?
Which story are we talking about here? The Yale one? The 21-year-old? He's getting there.
Good. It's a work
I just
in
started
progress.
This. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, 21 is, would be harder. I feel that's like young. If it was 25, yeah. I would
have. He lives in the answers. Basement. I mean, what do you want me to say?
Yeah, he's good at Street Fighter 2 and rolling joints.
So
does he have a YouTube channel?
No, Street Fighter 2 a PS4 thing or not?
Well, I don't think so.
Because, you know, I have this Google Wi-Fi app, and in the Google Wi-Fi app, I can see all the devices in my house. There's like 60 of them now because today's age, right? But I can see on the Wi-Fi app, like, who's using how much bandwidth, like, every day, right? And his three devices are, like, blowing the rest of the family out of the water. And the top is the PS4.
Oh, no kidding.
So I'm on to you, basement kid, who's not listening to this podcast, but still needs to figure out what he wants to be in life.
Interesting.
So, like, I think there's something there. It's not like, what are you interested in? It's like, what can you gain traction on that you have some form of feedback that you're doing good? Like, personal example, I used to blog, nobody listened for the first, like, couple years. But then once I started getting a little bit of feedback and people told me, hey, this is helpful, then I felt like, wow, okay, there's a purpose here. This helps me, because this helps other people. So I feel like I have a reason for it.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, similar awesome. For you, right? CSS tricks?
Sure.
Do you just do that because you love CSS?
Yeah, well, there certainly wasn't success in the first couple
well,
of years.
Well, it was a long
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Consistency, there you go. That's another.
So why did you keep,
love that.
How and why did you keep doing it when you didn't find it successful in the first,
greed.
Like a couple of years
greed?
Is a long
really?
Time.
Greed? Is that yours?
You're like, the you money's gonna come. Yeah. I'm just gonna keep blogging.
I don't know. Yeah.
Kind of.
Was it because you enjoyed doing it?
I absolutely did. And anytime any one person, like, especially in those early days when comment threads were like just little bastions of positivity, unlike there.
It's not like that now.
No, it's not. But in those days, one comment would come in and you'd be like, so cool.
Remember trackbacks?
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, I implemented trackbacks because you didn't even have to get the comment then. You just, somebody like referenced your blog.
No, you're in a link post or something, and that is an addictive feeling, honestly.
But it's very similar to what I'm talking about. That's the appreciation.
Right.
Right? It's like, okay, I wrote this and I was appreciated versus I'm interested in blogging. Like, I don't think it's just enough to do that.
Yeah. No,
that's great.
It's probably smart of Medium to have claps and crap because people get their first 7 claps.
They have craps? I thought it was just claps.
You gotta keep up. They change it.
These guys have got some third graders on the panel.
No, I really like your advice, Luke. It's, you know, find what you're good at and see how you can help others and serve others. I think that's kind of one of the reasons I chose the superhero theme for the podcast is because superheroes live their lives in service to others. And they fail, and they're real, and so I really like that angle.
Making me emotional about Spider-Man.
Which one, Tobey Maguire's?
Oh, no, that's all crap.
The emo Spider-Man?
No, like the comic book, not the catastrophes that have followed.
All right. So empathy, as Jeffrey mentioned earlier, it's kind of one of the most possibly overused buzzwords potentially in our industry, but yet it is so important. I think it's the pillar to building a great experience, is understanding who you're designing for and things. So what's the best way you found to grow in our empathy so we can design the best experiences possible for our users?
Yeah, it's hard to teach, isn't it? I mean, can you teach it?
Can you teach empathy?
I would think travel is probably pretty cool. So if you see other people. I just have, like, speaking of people that you hope don't listen to this, you're like, I feel like I have an uncle who's, like, way more hateful than, like, I feel like if he just traveled a little bit, like, some of that would chill out, like, when your geographical bubble is so small, I feel like your empathy struggles a little bit.
Sounds like you need some empathy for your uncle.
Ooh, zing. Yeah, try not being able to travel your whole life.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's true. Should you? But isn't that cyclical? Like,
it is, supposed to it have, is cyclical,
you're
right?
You're supposed
it
to have
is.
Empathy for racists? Is that a thing supposed to have?
So, edges away from microphone.
I didn't mean but you know what I mean. Like, it's tough. And I was. You're
no,
right.
That's an interesting point about the geography thing. I think getting out of our comfort zones. I think that's a big part of it. Discovering that there's a lot of people. We're unique. Nobody's like us. So it's understanding our audience a lot more and talking to them. Right. It's figuring out what their needs are.
I think it comes back to...
How do you grow it, though?
This is what comes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, do other people's jobs code a little. It's not designers have to code, but if you try to write some code and you realize, like, Git submits and merge conflicts suck ass, then you kind of have a little bit of empathy, right?
So you're talking about empathy with a team, with team members.
Yeah, all around, right? I mean, another thing that we do all the time is... go to people's houses and see how they're using the things you make. You'll gain a ton of empathy. But that firsthand, there's a reason why I always tell people they have to go in person to a usability test. It's not because whatever you may assume. It's because it sucks. It really sucks to see somebody using the thing that you made and not able to do it, right? It makes you feel like crap. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, if you just thought, oh God, mm-hmm. And I think you have to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of. I think I saw a tweet somebody put out there, like watching the usability test is like watching a horror movie and just going like, don't do that. Kind of like what Jeffrey was saying earlier, like just you want to help them, but yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, I used to work in the human factors lab at Toronto General Hospital, And we had a huge lab that was totally set up. It was supposed to be like a living room, but it had a shitty couch in a corner and like a big glass window, like you have a big glass window in your living room.
Oh, man, yeah.
So we would have doctors and nurses come in and use the medical device interfaces that we were doing. And I found that with other people in the lab with me, we would sort of, I'm not proud of it, but it was easy to shrug them off. You could kind of laugh at what they were doing and just kind of shrug your shoulders and say, okay, well, we'll fix that next iteration. I don't know if that really develops the kind of empathy that is helpful to you. I think the thing that helped me the most was actually conducting the test, that actually mm-hmm. being in the room mm-hmm. and looking at somebody, you know, making eye contact with them. There's something about that physicality that you don't get when there's a piece of glass behind mm-hmm. you and they know you're watching them and you know you're watching them, but there's no actual interaction.
It's even worse when you're mm-hmm. in their house. And they offer you tea, right? And you drank their tea, and then you make them suffer for an hour and a half from the crappy interface you made.
Do you send flowers or something?
There's no words left at that point. There's nothing you can do.
I like what you said, Cassie, about the eye contact factor. And I mean, there's certainly a ton of remote usability testing options out there available. And those are great and they're helpful, but I just don't think there's any substitute for actually being in the same space with that person and actually going to where they are, right? In that context of where they are, because it's more natural. Like I said, they're not like in a lab with glass, you know, mirrors and things like that. And I think also the mirror neuron factor is a big part of that too. And we watch movies and, you know, we react, right? We see the actors on stage and we see them get emotional and then we get emotional. What's happening here? So our mirror neurons kicking in. And so I think those are really helpful things.
I like that, I've not heard that. Yeah, it's helpful with colleagues too. I mean, who here works remotely? A lot of people?
That
yeah,
like
it's,
wow.
It's hard to work remotely because you don't have that immediate physical contact with somebody. And then also, you're working alone a lot of the time, so you're building up these stories in your head that may not be necessarily true. Mm. And you're imagining what that person thinks or feels, and you're not actually talking to them.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Well, can I say one thing on that?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think you're a team until you go through some shit together. Right? Ooh. Like, something's gotta go bad, or you have to screw something up, and you have to all be there together to make it happen. And until then, you're just working together. You're not a team yet. But after you go through that, like, you just have a totally different relationship with people. And yeah. So I highly advise screw something up together.
That resonated with somebody.
That's good advice. That's it really is. Good.
Yeah, fully agree. Chris, do you want to add something to that?
Now I'm thinking of scenarios for faking it, you know?
Faking like, failure?
No, because, you know, not failure, but like screwing something up. It just reminded me of, God,
war
it
games,
wasn't.
Dude, war
we were
games.
Talking about, it was like some one of the speakers was talking about like Obama era, like all the testing and stuff they did on the websites during that campaign.
Oh,
all
yeah.
That, you know, and how they would have like server failure days where some guy would just come and just start pulling cords out of servers and stuff to see if their infrastructure could handle that kind of random chaos. And I was like, I don't know, I wonder if that bred team feeling towards each other because it was such a painful thing to go through.
That's interesting.
It brings team feeling against that guy mm-hmm. that's pulling all the plugs, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a secret.
No, I think that's true. Yeah. You know, you go through a shared experience with somebody and, you know, it's on a team building software, yeah, fail together and you know, own it and you get stronger and you build better things. So, yeah, I like that. So a couple more questions here, and then we'll open it up to you lovely people. So how about this one? One of the main reasons I started User Defenders podcast was to help designers stay inspired. How do you stay inspired in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field?
I luck out. I get it. I keep doing that. I kind of get it for free because I have this platform with a bunch of super smart people on it that every day I wake up to people like using it to do crazy experiments and lovely designs and push the boundaries of what the web's able to do. So it just kind of comes to my doorstep. I recommend you build an inspiration machine and then
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. It's kind of cool, though, because, yeah, the front page of CodePen is like, hand-picked, look at this cool thing somebody did, and we have kind of like an army of people that help choose those, and I pick a ton of them, too, and we have, like, stats on it. Anyway, it's fun, but it's not algorithmic. It's definitely like, I'm looking at you, I see your work, it's really cool, here's a micro reward kind of thing for it.
I go to CodePen to get inspired.
Nice.
I'm just kidding.
There's a lot there.
Well, yeah, there is.
You can actually see what's going on under the hood.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, there's, like, no offense, but there's so many things like that, right?
There's
tons of places to go for inspiration. There's no lack of that. I feel like, for me, it's more a state of mind. It's like, am I being receptive to what the world is showing me today? Just open up the internet. It's not hard to find inspiration. It's whether or not you're willing to accept it and be inspired by it.
Mm. That's pretty deep, Cassie.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I like that.
There's definitely some blade of grass stuff going on in inspiration, right? Like I went for a bike ride and good things happened, which is more likely that good things happen during that moment than do when you're just like, I guess I'll go to bestweb-gallery.net and see what's happening over there.
Yeah, I
think you're spot on there. There's too much inspiration, so what you actually I find I need is moments where I'm not thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I also ride bikes,
but
I ride them fast down hills, and when you're like just trying to stay alive.
I follow you on Strava.
Thank you. This is where that part of your brain kind of opens up, right? And there's something to physical kind of like focus and strain that I think lets your brain either relax and stop trying to absorb all this info and make connections. Because I hands down have all my best ideas on bike rides.
Nice.
And I have a 3-hour block carved out every Wednesday morning where I go into the mountains, ride my bike for like 5 hours. And without that, I don't think I'd be half as effective. Not that I'm effective, but I wouldn't even have that smidgen had I not time for my brain to like congeal all the stuff that's hitting me 24/7.
That's good. I like that. Just want to sit in this moment for a second.
Sure. Let's all do jumping jacks, and once it starts to really hurt, then we'll be inspired.
This is my last question, and we'll open it up. What's the greatest lesson you've learned in this field?
Just gonna let this one hang.
Let's just sit here.
Silence is golden.
The greatest lesson.
I'm always gonna jump on the persistence one and the consistency thing because it's just been good to me. That like, I don't care if anybody's listening. I'm just gonna rock on this idea forever because I like it. And like, even in the days that I don't like it, if I just keep going, that keep goingness is always good to me.
Keep going-ness?
Sure.
It's a good one. No, I like that one. I align with that. I think the greatest thing I have, was it learned? Learned in this industry?
Learned.
From this industry or in this industry? Just quotes this industry?
Either.
Yeah. There's so many contributions that the community has made to what I know and what I've learned and things I've looked at and people I've met that it's like a endless list, but I've talked to many people in other industries and it's a totally different world, right? Meaning people just kind of like stick to themselves, they don't share, they don't talk. And honestly, it sort of saddens me to see the openness of the technology culture now kind of coming under attack as it gains more popularity, right? And things kind of being more brought in, because that was the best gift that I ever got from the internet was access to the world's human beings and their brains and their ideas and all that kind of stuff. Well, I think the thing I've learned the most is just to sort of like listen and pay attention and, and appreciate that.
I think we fight that feeling of it's becoming more closed and it's not what it used to be. And we fight that by being vulnerable and open, and we don't fight it by stopping doing what we're doing, but just keep doing more of it. And, you know, don't get on the criticism bandwagon, but, you know, be open and put yourself out there. I think that's how we do it. I know it's not going to get better.
It's more whack-a-mole than find a friend, right? And over time, it's wearing, to be like totally candid with you, right?
Yeah.
I feel bad sometimes for one of that ways of being totally open with what you're doing is it's just the generic concept of open source, and that's as hot of a topic as there has ever been in a long time. There, it's just rough being an open source. That's, I don't know what else to say about that other than I have some empathy for that situation where they're trying to do the ultimate good, and it just becomes this horrible job, you know.
I have no. God, this is really negative. Yeah, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. There's a lot of great stuff happening. And yeah. I mean, yeah, in open source, you get to work on what you're passionate about, and you get to do that every day.
Yeah.
And you get to feel like your work is meaningful and having an impact. So you get that. It's a balance. You got to step away from it for a while, maybe, and then come back to it. But
sure.
I get that it's depressing. Maybe I'm not quite there yet.
It's not depressing. It's just... the more it becomes like maintenance work, I think the less people commit to it and spend time to it. And you really gotta kind of slug it out just to stay on it.
I only mention the bad parts because then if it gets worse, then there's less open source, and that's a downhill snowball. Oh my God, I'm so negative.
Woo! I'm gonna throw a t-shirt at somebody.
Yeah, let's throw it.
Open source is dying.
Medium asphalt.
You're hurting
here. I'm going to try to see if I can actually get some air to this.
What episode number?
Are we ready?
Watch the wine glass.
Okay.
Episode 31. The death.
Everyone heads up, all right?
Oh! Oh my God. Wow. Oh!
That was awesome.
See? Right at the darkest hour.
Yeah.
You
that
see
t-shirt
the good.
Was a phoenix.
You see the good in humanity.
That's pretty good. I wish I would have... Well, if I threw the first one like that, I would have probably hurt you, Jeff. So I want to open it up to you folks. Who wants to ask a question? Please come on up to the mic and ask this wonderful panel your question.
You know what? If more people threw t-shirts in awesome ways, the world would be a better place.
Hi. Burnout is a persistent problem in this industry, whether you're working in open source or doing your own thing or writing or whatever. And I kind of want to know from each of you, how do you manage burnout? Do you persist through it? Do you kind of pull away? Like, what are your strategies? Because I think that would be a valuable thing to know. Thank you.
Yeah, excellent question.
Hit it up. Have you had it?
Yeah. I'm actually totally burned out right now. I've got a 4-year-old and an 18-month-old. I'm starting a business. It's like a lot of work.
Yeah, give her a hand.
I have no time for myself. And when you're a new mom as well, you're like, you totally have given your whole life over to these little children that do not appreciate it. And so I take a break. I try not to fill every single second with thinking about work or thinking about what my clients want or what I'm building. I just gotta take a break and sleep, try to eat well. You know, it's the basics. It's nothing groundbreaking. But I think if you are trying to do just pushing through it, that feels worse. You're not gonna, you know, you need the physical, you need to go for a bike ride downhill and fast and almost kill yourself, I guess.
That feels like the basics too.
That is the basics, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the basics.
Yeah, it's the basics.
People used to go on vacation, they used to go to Hawaii.
Yeah, they
go to Hawaii.
Go to Hawaii.
Yeah, that's right. Go to Hawaii. That's good.
Yeah.
It may not work for everybody. I think it was a talk by Alicia Sedlock I saw one time. It was talking about burnout, and it was really good. We'll try to find a video for you for the show notes, but it was a... But she kind of did try to make a distinction in there between total burnout, which was like donezo. There was a mental component of like snapping to it and like being like, I need to just be done.
Like comatose.
And then, which I haven't had, so I can't speak to that. But then she made this distinction on the scale that like, maybe let's not overuse the word burnout, but there's also brownouts too, which is just like, you know, more of that like, enough for today kind of thing, which maybe is more manageable with bike rides and stuff. And I think there's a lot of brownout stuff happening in there. And then I don't know if it's useful to make that distinction, but if you have like a mental snap, literally, that might require more intervention and changes than just tiredness.
Yeah, I haven't had the burnout thing, knock on wood. But I don't know if I've had burnout either, but I do lots of different things, and so I think that's what keeps me at least semi-sane. You know, if one thing is kind of blocking me or I get stuck on it, I do something different and then come back to the other thing, even if it's just for a few hours or a few days or something like that.
That's a good idea,
because our brains are still working on those problems when we
walk away from it. Yeah, our brain never forgets, right? Remember the boss in the toilet, like he's always there.
I think you
I had to bring it back because you loved it so, so much good. Last time. That's why, why I'm here for you.
Just if you have too many tugs on your time and you're trying to please too many people, figure out which ones you can cut. You know, you can't please everybody, so just let that go and figure out which ones you don't need to pay the bills or whatever.
That's great. Yeah, learn to say no more often, yeah. Another question. Come on up. Here we go. You can make a line too. It's fine. There's another mic over here too, my friend. If you wanted to.
Hi.
Hey. Who are you?
I'm Jake. I work for an e-commerce company. One of the things within my organization that I try to do as someone on the UX team is kind of foster user empathy across the organization with other kind of stakeholders, colleagues, et cetera, cross-functionally. And it's a struggle. I think I've tried a lot of different things. Our team has tried a lot of different things, and I'm wondering what your advice would be on kind of spreading that user empathy. What are the most effective ways you have seen or employed yourself to do so?
Have you made videos of people actually using your stuff?
Yeah, and I actually, within that, kind of like, is just playing it in front of people without asking them the best way to do it once you make that video, or is...
Rick roll them.
There you go. No, I mean, we have videos, and I actually think we're kind of wrestling through the question of, like, you know, if we just send that in Slack or an email, like, who's going to watch it? Who's going to devote the time to that?
No, How long should the video be? Showing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the time that we had the most success with that was, like, we put snippets of actual people using the stuff. Like short ones though, not like the whole session. Just take the highlights, the most painful moments, and create a bit of a narrative, add music to it. I mean, it's a stupid trick, but, and then just show it and make eye contact with people when you're showing it to them and say, like, do you see this? This is bananas.
That is great.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Do you have a budget for that? Like, do you use a platform to do your user testing? Like, okay, nice. Awesome. I was going to say, for anyone who maybe doesn't have the budget and is trying to bring awareness to bad usability, I think usertesting.com has a free thing. I think it's called peek.usertesting.com. I think P-E-E-K. I think so. And it's like a free test you can actually do, and they'll give somebody. Now, granted, it's not going to be your target user exactly, but it's the normal user who's trying to work through a problem, and it was compelling enough. I used it once. It was compelling enough to actually get my manager to go, whoa, we need to change that right now. So things to consider. Sorry.
You ever seen Christmas Vacation? So remember, like, Clark wasn't getting the Christmas bonus, and he really needed it. And so his cousin kidnapped his boss and tied him and brought him to Clark's house. And the boss saw Clark's family and developed this deep sense of empathy and help them out. Mm. Same basic story, right?
Yeah. Your advice.
Like Scrooge, you know?
Like visited by three ghosts.
Yeah, same basic. Like, the bottom line is you have to have the experience. And there's a decreasing list of visceralness. Video is pretty high on the list because you see people. The highest on the list is actually, like, being next to the customer in their home and seeing things. So, and then, you know, like, if you have that list of what is the most visceral to the least, work your way down it and see what you can pull off. You might not be able to kidnap the boss necessarily, but you may very well. We got both Yahoo and eBay CEOs to go on home visits, and those were really big deals for them, right? And they go to, like, one or two, and they're like, oh my God, we have to do this and that and this and that and do-do-do-do-do. Oh.
That's a good point, though, to do it top down.
Yeah, start with the highest impact. And the lowest impact is, I made a deck and I'm going to just email it to you, which is what most people do. But it doesn't have any of that Clark Griswold factor, right?
I will say we used to set up user testing sessions, and because we were a totally remote team, we could have people in channel secretly watching it, so from wherever they were, and barely anybody took us up on that to do it. So that's why I recommend a screening, like, you know, give people popcorn or something. Just make it fun, because people want what's easy. But I really like the top-down thing. Yeah. That will work.
Smart. Yeah, thanks, Jake. Great question. You had one?
So I've been...
What's your name? I'm sorry.
I'm Martin.
Martin. Hey, Martin.
So over the past few years, I've been transitioning from front-end to UX, and I've been doing, you know, I've done architecture and prototyping for a few apps now, but I can tell that the next sort of mountain that I need to climb is user testing, so I was wondering if y'all had any resources or advice for someone who's, you know, at the very beginning of that journey.
Peak.usertesting.com. Try that. First of all, that's my first advice.
Are there any coffee shops near you? Yeah, so set up an outside or inside a little coffee shop, grab people, give them a little $5 gift card for spending 5-10 minutes with you, and run them through the thing, and you'll learn all the joys of being a user researcher really quickly. But I think that's kind of the, we do that all the time at cafes at Google. We'll just go and talk to people and kind of do it very lightweight and guerrilla. Because all you really want to do is have people talk out loud while they're trying to accomplish what the thing is you made. Or do they even understand what it's for? And you'll learn a ton. I think that's a very nice entry rep. And I appreciate the remote accessibility, the remote stuff. But I just think they make it too easy for you. Like, you don't suffer enough.
Right. Yeah. I don't know what Jerry McGovern's going to talk about, but I think he's the last talk on the last day, and he's like has a whole thing on this, so that'll be enjoyable for you.
I wonder what his take on it is.
It's kind of like, I think that he'd probably agree that the coffee shop thing is pretty cool, but sometimes not being in the room is better, because the being in the room is a little intimidating, and when you're looking at their screen, you know, when you've just given them some instructions, it's a little bit more raw. Your vibe, man.
It's also not true to life. I mean, when somebody is actually using your thing, they don't have somebody standing over their shoulder watching them use it.
Yeah, they're not just on their own phone doing their
own. Exactly.
I agree with all those caveats. There's like lots of issues with usability testing, but the bottom line is the closer you actually get to another human being that you're making something for, good things will happen.
Yeah.
Right? And I just feel a lot of times when we create distance there, it's for our kind of like pseudo benefit, we're like, oh, I don't have to talk to this person. I'll just upload this thing, and insights will come back.
It's not as valuable, because you also can't adapt the way that you're asking the questions. So if you see somebody doing something and you're like, oh, that's really interesting, I wonder why they're doing it, then you can ask more questions and dig deeper into it, which you can't do when you just upload it to.
You also don't meet the person, right? Like, you don't. There's not this human-to-human kind of moment, which is, I think, the key part of the thing. Who knows what you ask them, to your point, right? You could ask them all sorts of crazy stuff that you wouldn't have thought to if you had a script or something like that.
Martin, is that helpful? Yeah. Awesome. So I think we may have time for one more quick one. Toby? One more quick one? Yes? Yeah? Okay. Let's do one more quick one. We got to wrap here in just about maybe 1 minute.
Thanks. Okay, my name is Steve. I'm here with my GA class. We all came out here for this.
Hey. So, woo. All right. Woo.
So what advice do you have for us on getting our first job? How important is the first job, or just go find some work?
Everyone's looking at Cassie. Yeah.
Me?
What are you good at that people appreciate that helps others?
Just build websites. Okay. We're going to do the hits.
We're doing the hits.
Yeah. Oh, I missed it.
We're putting a bow on this right now. This is great. Putting a bow on it.
I think it does matter. I think it does matter. It sets you up for, it's who you meet in the industry. It's how they shape your skills and you know, how you learn, what you learn. I mean, you can have a terrible job and still learn from it and still go on and do great things. But I think it's a harder uphill battle than if you try really hard to get your foot in the door in somewhere that you really want to be, that you're really pumped to be there.
I heard advice from somebody else once that was like, don't start your own freelance company that on day two of leaving there or whatever. Is going to an agency, there's going to be lots of different things going on, and it'll just be fast-paced and hard and stuff, and that will like expose you to a lot right away. That was somebody else's advice, but I thought it was.
Yeah. You need to make your own advice. Make your own. Make your own path. No, seriously, like, my first job was in a supercomputing research firm, right? It wasn't even a job, really, right? It was more of like a weird internship thing. And then I taught classes at a university, and then I did freelance, and then I went to a big company. And it was a totally messed up path that made no sense, right? But, like, I kind of connected the dots based on what was available at the time, and you just sort of, like, see doors and decide whether or not you should walk through them. So find a bunch of doors and kind of figure out which ones you want to open.
And pick the best one to go through at the moment.
But don't listen
to
any
conflicting advice.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say
if anybody gives you something very prescriptive, that may have worked for them, but it's like survivor bias, right? What do they call it? Survivorship bias? You know, you should definitely work at a big company first because that's what I did.
Yeah.
And look at me. Okay, well, you've survived, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the right thing for other people.
Yeah, and so I would just say, and go for something that makes you uncomfortable too. Something you really want, it makes you uncomfortable. Don't just go for, I think I could fit into this one little niche. No, go bigger. Be uncomfortable about it, because you know what? Thankfully, we're seeing a lot of a shift of hiring for attitude and training for skills. So, you know, have a great attitude and be thinking a lot all the time about, you know, how you can make things better. And then just go for that job that makes you a little uncomfortable. And just be confident about it.
I like that. My friend Bill Scott has a really awesome quote, because he's quite smart. He says, go for a job that gives you a race in the heart and a pit in the stomach.
Bam. Well, folks, and thanks for the great question. We got to wrap now. Thanks so much, panel. Can we give them a hand? Amazing. I want to thank Eric and Jeffrey. Thank you so much, you guys, for having me here. I'm a longtime enthusiast of an event apart. It is an incredible honor, and I'm just humbled to be here. Thank you guys so much for this opportunity. Thank you guys for being here. Check out the podcast. New season kicks off January 15th. Thank you very much. Fight on, my friends.
Fun discussion, right? I can't thank Cassie, Chris, and Luke enough for being on the panel. They added a ton of value and frivolity at the same time. I hope to do more things like this in the future for sure. This was a huge step out of my comfort zone, being on a stage I've revered and with people I've respected for well over a decade. I hope you found a lot of value and enlightenment in this Defenders. Some really great questions from the audience as well about navigating a career in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field. Again, if you're not already and would prefer to experience this fun discussion in video, you can find it on YouTube channel at youtube.com/userdefenders. Lastly, if you want to automatically receive new episodes immediately after they're published, and there's some good ones coming, Defenders, please subscribe at userdefenders.com/subscribe. Thanks so much for tuning in, Defenders, and until next time, as always, fight on, my friends.